My name is Kent. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. In my past, I've struggled mainly with alcohol and drugs, although gambling, pornography, cigarettes, and food have caused me problems as well. I was born in Salem, Oregon on April 17, 1961, to Claude and Lois Kilgore. I was the sixth out of seven children. I have two brothers and four sisters. Mom and Dad were high school sweethearts who stayed married and raised us kids through thick and thin. I have fond memories of my childhood. My parents were good examples of hardworking, honest people who had the respect and love of those that knew them. Dad was a firm, logical man, and Mom was the ultimate mother. As kids, we were taught to work for what we wanted. We picked strawberries and beans in the summer to earn our own money. We saved for bikes, clothes, and anything that we wanted that was special to us. At the age of 12, I bought my first car. It was a 1955 Chevy. It didn't run at the time, but I figured it out. I fixed it and sold it and made a profit. I learned a great lesson, and with my dad's guidance, I started buying and selling cars way back then. I certainly preferred that over to the labor of the fields. As a family, we weren't really involved in a church, and I wasn't really exposed to a Christian lifestyle. This made it difficult for a young man left to discover pretty much on his own what, how, or who had formed this world that we live in. I remember spending hours of thought on this mystery, so I tended to believe what was taught in the schools about evolution. It sounded good to me, it made sense, and it gave me something to hold on to. We would have holiday celebrations at our house, and our family would gather, and there was usually alcohol around. I saw how it affected the older members of the family, and it looked like they were having fun. I was curious, of course, and I looked forward to the day when I might be able to join in. Little did I know that I had a disease lurking in my body. I was occasionally allowed a beer or two at home, but I always found a way to sneak an additional drink. To me, it was an answer to my feelings of not fitting in. I know now that by experimenting with alcohol and drugs as early as the ages 12 or 13, that was the beginning of a lifetime of bad decisions and poor choices. As I entered junior high, it was a way of allowing me to express myself. I was shy and awkward like kids are at that age, so I followed the in crowd and would drink and party and whenever I could get away with it. So a habit/addiction had started early in my life, very early. This kind of behavior continued into high school. I was able to do well in school. I always had about a B average. I never skipped school, and that was probably because of the way that I was raised. I didn't want to, and maybe I was a little bit afraid of taking home bad grades, if you knew my dad. Things were pretty good those days, but I was headed in the wrong direction for sure. Sometime during high school, my mom found some baggies of marijuana under my bed when she was changing the sheets. I was gone for the weekend camping or something, and she let me discover that they were gone before she said anything. She was upset and asked if I was selling marijuana, and I lied to her and told her no, that I had bought multiple bags just like that she had found. You know, I felt bad more for hurting her. Than I did for having been caught. I partied through high school and continued partying into my adult life. Some of my friends moved on, and some did like me and hung out in Salem and holding down jobs. We'd hold down jobs, but we drank, we did cocaine, did speed, smoked pot, and had parties every weekend. Everybody did it. It was a social thing, or so I thought. And at this time, it was really all that I knew. For the next 30 years, I lived a life of bad choices, trouble with the law, and broken relationships. I got my first DUI when I was about 20 years old. I had rented a car from a car rental company that I worked for, and I went out partying and ran it off the road. I had totaled a brand new 1980 Ford Mustang. I'm dating myself. The cops found me walking away from the scene. I was fired from my job the next day. This was my first real brush with the law, and I didn't take it serious at all, but I was all right, no big deal. Late in 1986, I got a girl pregnant. I wanted nothing to do with this responsibility. I was more worried about myself and how it would affect me. I refused to be a part of the pregnancy or help her in any way. She told me that she was definitely keeping the child and would not come after me for help in any way if that was the way that I wanted it. She did have the baby, and my daughter Casey was born on September 16, 1988. I do remember driving by their house a few times to see if I could catch a glimpse of her. But drinking, partying, and selfishness distracted me from my responsibilities as a father. My dad died on July 17th in 1988. It was hard to watch cancer slowly take this big, strong man down. He taught me so many things about being a good, honest man. I wasn't living up to his examples at this time in my life. I was 27 years old, and he had already told me I needed to change my life and change my friends. But I didn't see it. But he was right. I was in denial about my life big time. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Proverbs 14:16 says, "One who is wise and cautious and turns away from evil, one who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless." Well, I was reckless and careless for the next 30 years. They were a blur of jail, parties, and trouble. I did things that I'll never remember. I made a lot of stupid, bad decisions. There were multiple DUIs, multiple driving while suspended, and 3 or 4 assaults. I picked up trespassing charges and even a forgery charge for cashing a bad check. If I lost my license because of a DUI, I would still drive. I was sent to many treatment programs for my DUIs and one for my anger. I hated being told what to do. I would do just enough to get by. Just like school, I got good grades. I always accomplished the task at hand. And I drank the whole time. And I drove the whole time. Was everything all right with me? I was starting to wonder. So the scene had been set. I was going to live my life in an alcohol and drug-induced haze. I would hold jobs sometimes for a couple of years, but would eventually quit or get fired. I was fired from a job at Shopko for coming in too many times smelling like alcohol. My mom died on June 10th of 2002. I was staying with her at the time, basically because I didn't have anywhere else to go. I would justify my actions here by saying that she needed my help. She may have, but I definitely needed hers. She wasn't feeling well one morning, so I took her to the hospital. She died a couple of days later, and I was a wreck. Drinking and drugged out, I received an inheritance and blew it on drinking, drugs, cars, gambling, and motel rooms. The people I was hanging out with came out of the woodwork. They were really my friends now. I missed being robbed by about 5 minutes. When I returned to the place that I was living after being gone for an errand, armed men had come in with masks on and robbed everybody in the house. It was pretty much a drug house. They were looking for me and my money, I'm sure. I carried a gun for a month or two after that. I was really hanging out with a bad crowd. They were criminals, drug dealers, car thieves, shoplifters, forgers, and just a rough crowd. I felt like I wasn't as bad as some of these people. Right. I was right there with them. And then came the whopper. In January of 2003, I got pulled over for a cracked windshield, and I was so high I couldn't sit still. The officer asked me to get out of the car, and when I did, he saw a baggie of methamphetamine on the floorboard. The cuffs came out, and I was arrested. Upon a search of the vehicle, they found 2 ounces of meth, and I was charged with delivery and possession of a controlled substance. They were both felonies. I'd been selling to support my own habit. I was booked into jail, and to my surprise, I was released that night. I received a court date to return. Now, up to this point, I had always gone to my court dates. And maybe that's why they let me go. I don't know. But I knew that I was in big trouble this time. But that didn't stop the insanity that was my life at that time. While waiting for that court date, I continued to use and sell meth. And for the first time in my life, I didn't show up for court. Now I had a warrant for my arrest. I was out of money. I didn't have a job. I'd burned too many bridges to have a place to stay. Except for my mom, I never really asked any of my family for help. But now she was gone. And I was too prideful to go to anybody in my family. You see, I knew prison was coming up, and I didn't want to tell my family. I remember living out of my pickup about this time. I'd worn out my welcome at all my so-called friends' places. After all, my money was all gone. Pretty down low. So I waited to get caught. I slept in Walmart's parking lot, and I scrounged bottles and cans for gas money. Finally, in March 2004, I was pulled over for something else, and I got arrested. This time, they didn't let me go. Eventually, I was sentenced to 50 months in prison for the methamphetamine that they had found months before. Psalms 40:12 says, "Problems far too big for me to solve are piled higher than my head. Meanwhile, my sins, too many to count, have all caught up with me, and I'm ashamed to look up." In prison, it took me a full year to admit that meth was a problem. Talk about denial. But I vowed never to touch meth again, and I meant it. I started to wake up a little. I took any programs I could to learn, and that would get me out of my cell. I went to some church services, learned a few things about God saving lives, and I listened. I started to work out physically and began to feel better about myself. All the while, except for my one uncle, Lon, and his family, I don't think any of my brothers and sisters knew where I was. I was sent to Two Rivers Correctional Facility in Umatilla with 50 months to do. I didn't get any visits out there, but that was fine with me. I was still ashamed that I could handle this alone. After my first year, I was moved into Salem. I was sent to the Oregon State Penitentiary and then to the Santiam Correctional Facility, and the word got out to my family where I was at. Soon, my Uncle Lon, my brother Kelly, my sister Kathy, my sister Colleen, and her boys would visit. Darn Christians, anyway. But I loved those visits. They would just talk, listen, and once in a while pray with me. My relationship with God had just barely begun. I ended up at Mill Creek Correctional Facility after being moved around a bit. It's a long story. At Mill Creek, I was able to gain some good work experience working in a machine shop. I worked hard for the next 3 years and was pretty much a model inmate. When I got out of prison in May of 2008, I lived with my sister Colleen and her family in Turner, Oregon. They were a great influence on me. I love them and my two nephews very much. I attended church with them and stayed clean for almost a whole year. But soon my lack of a real support system, one involving recovery, began to allow thoughts of drinking to become too powerful to resist. Oh, I attended some AA and NA meetings, but once again, just for looks. I wasn't working a program. I never had. I started to drink again with people from work, and soon I was asked to move out of my sister's house. This was about 2009, when I attended my 30th high school class reunion at a bar. While I was there, I noticed a very attractive girl whose face I recognized from school, but I couldn't remember who she was. There was nothing I could do because she left early and she wasn't drinking. We were. Later, my friend Bob told me that it was his ex-wife, Wendy, and that she was single. What? I said. But it was too late. She was gone. A week or 10 days later, I was blown away when she emailed me or messaged me on Facebook. I can't remember. But she wanted to meet for coffee. I felt like a kid again. Of course, we did, and it turned into lunch, and we agreed to see each other again. We dated, and eventually I ruined her sobriety and got her to drink with me. This just goes on and on. I was still so caught up in my own selfishness that I didn't respect other people's lives. After dating for some time, I proposed to this beautiful lady, and to my extreme joy, she said yes. She's right there. We continued to date and eventually moved into our friend's house and rented a room. I was working, but drinking every day. This started to cause problems in our relationship. I just wouldn't quit. I got into a fight. Actually, I just hit a guy in a bar that I was thought was being disrespectful, and I was arrested. But I wasn't done. We were having problems, Wendy and I was really pouring on the alcohol. A couple months later, I got another DUI. I was still on parole, and my parole officer was furious. Everything was not okay. We delayed our marriage by a year. Actually, we split up for a while about this time. Eventually, we agreed that we both needed help. My issues were obvious. I was in trouble with the law again and would be going to jail. Wendy entered inpatient treatment for gambling, and I waited to go to jail. I was still drinking and lying to her and telling her that I wasn't. But eventually, I went to jail while she was still in treatment. The assault and the DUI were combined, and I was sentenced to 210 days for the DUI, 90 days for the assault at the county jail. By this time, I was getting pretty tired of jail. I was 49 years old, and my life was still a mess. I was ready to change, but really had no idea how. I needed help, but I wouldn't admit it. While I was at the Marion County Jail, I got transferred to the work center. After a little while, they asked me if I wanted to work in the automotive shop. It would certainly be better than working on the road crews that I had started on. I met Steve Skinner the next day. He's a Marion County mechanic employee that I would be working with. He recognized me because he knew my uncle and aunt from Grace Community Church in Salem, where they all attended church. Before long, Steve encouraged me to go to Celebrate Recovery at their church. It starts to get good here. My uncle had taken me once before, so I was familiar with what it was. I got permission to go from my counselor, and I started to go on Tuesday nights. I was also allowed to attend the Celebrate Recovery at Bethany Baptist Church in Salem on Friday nights. So I started to go to both of those. I started to open up in those meetings. I mean, really open up. I was sober and tired of messing up. I would ride the bus, get rides from my uncle, Wendy, whatever it took to get me there and back. After I finished my time at Marion County, I stayed with my Uncle Lon and Aunt Myrna for a while. My uncle and aunt were always willing to help me. I didn't know it, but Uncle Lon had been praying for me for years. But I drank again. Can you believe it? What a terrible hold alcohol had on me. I was powerless. Romans 7:18 says, "I know that nothing good lives in me, that is in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out." I was attending church in CR, and I was learning about God's forgiving grace, but I was still struggling. This was in 2011, and a men's retreat at Grace Community Church was in the near future. And Steve, the same Steve from jail, being the persistent servant of God that he was, invited me to go with him. That retreat changed me. I was touched by God that weekend. The men, the speakers, and the worship combined to create what I can only call a spiritual experience in me. I wanted to change. I wanted to be a better man. I wanted to have Wendy as my wife. And I knew now that following Christ was the only way that I could obtain these new goals. So at that point, I was 3 days without a drink. And I asked Steve to be my sponsor on the way home. He agreed and laid out the guidelines for our new relationship. I had work to do. This was the first time in my life I had ever asked for help. I mean, really asked for help. I did my best to follow his guidelines. I attended 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to church, Celebrate Recovery, AA, and NA. I started to allow God to take control of my life. And it wasn't easy giving up control. It was downright strange to me. But I knew I couldn't do it the way that I'd been trying before. That was for sure. I needed help. I needed new friends. I needed God in my life, and that's what started to happen. God showed me a way out of my messed up life. I prayed to God for help and Celebrate Recovery with God, and as my higher power began to work. A lot has changed since that weekend. Wendy and I were married on July 16th in 2011. God has provided me an angel to go through my life with. I'm grateful for my beautiful wife. We work our recovery together and seek God's will for our lives daily. On June 10th of 2012, exactly 10 years to the day of my mom's death, I was baptized by my cousin Mike Gillespie at Grace Community Church. It was a very powerful experience for me. I felt God's presence that day on the stage as the stage was filled with my family and friends. Since that men's retreat in February 2011, with God and my accountability partners in my corner, I haven't had a drink. 6 years exactly yesterday. I've stayed away from meth for 13 years, and I quit smoking 2 years ago. God really was the missing piece of the puzzle for me. I'm not perfect. I still have a lot of work to do. I need to continue to work and seek a stronger relationship with Him as I continue to work on myself and my life. Romans 8:38, 39. For I'm convinced that nothing can ever separate us from His love. Death can't and life can't. The angels won't, and all the powers of hell itself cannot keep God's love away. Our fears for today, our worries about tomorrow or where we are, high above the sky or in the desert, deepest ocean, nothing will ever be able to separate us from the love of God demonstrated by our Lord Jesus Christ when He died for us. And all I've done is what the program tells you to do. This time I didn't mind being told what to do. I've completed 3-step studies, one as the leader. I'm the leader of a Celebrate Recovery Men's Chemical Addiction Group at Grace Community Church in Salem. I'm willing to serve in any way that I can. Sometimes I'm a greeter, sometimes I'm an usher. Sometimes I help clean up or I help set up. I've even filled in for our ministry leader, Brian, when he couldn't be there. After giving this testimony for the first time, Brian made me his apprentice. Wow. I'm a ministry leader apprentice. I'm in leadership. Never would have dreamed that my life would take this direction, but how wonderful it is. I have a relationship with my daughter, Casey, now. The years of being absent will never be replaced, but we see each other when we can. We share a love for the Portland Trailblazers. Sometimes I go to a game and she's there, and we'll text each other, and then we'll meet somewhere. She's a beautiful young lady that her father's very proud of. I get the most satisfaction from steps 8 and 9 that talk about making a list of those that we've harmed and make direct amends whenever possible. I did that with Casey and her mom, and they both forgave me. It meant a lot to me. There's one thing, the one thing that really blows my mind, though, that I thought would never be possible, is that God has opened the doors for me to be able to take Celebrate Recovery inside. To the men at the Oregon State Penitentiary, where I once was a prisoner, I am now a servant of God. Thank you.